That better mean something good.
Uncle Macon cleared his throat and adjusted a cuff of his crisp white shirt.
It does indeed, Mr. Lincoln. It does indeed.
Arms crossed, Marion stepped out from behind the desk.
Would someone like to tell me exactly what happened tonight?
She stared at my uncle expectantly.
Liv and I have been worried sick.
He glared at me.
As you can imagine, their little showdown with my brother and Abraham did not go according to plan, and Mr. Breed almost met an untimely end.
But Uncle M saved the day.
Ridley didn't even try to hide her sarcasm. He gave Hunting a sunburn where the sun don't shine.
Now, let's get on with the part where you give us a big lecture and we all get grounded.
Marion turned to my uncle.
Is she implying?
Uncle Macon nodded.
Huntin is no longer with us.
Abraham's dead too, John added. Marion stared at Uncle Macon as if he had just parted the Red Sea.
You killed Abraham Ravenwood?
Link cleared his throat loudly, grinning.
No, ma'am. I did.
For a moment, Marion was speechless.
I think I need to sit down,
she said, her knees beginning to buckle. John rushed behind the desk to get her a chair. Marion pressed her fingers against her temples.
You're telling me that Hunting and Abraham are dead?
That would be correct,
Uncle Macon said. Marion shook her head.
Anything else?
Just this, Aunt Marion. Ethan's nickname for her just slipped out before I realized it. I dropped the Book of Moons on the polished wood tabletop next to her. Liv inhaled sharply.
Oh my God!
I stared down at the worn black leather, embossed with a crescent moon, and the weight of the moment closed in on me. My hands shook, and my legs felt like they were about to give out too.
I can't believe it.
Marion inspected the book suspiciously, as if I were returning a late library book into her system. She would never be anything less than 100% librarian.
It's the real deal.
Ridley leaned against one of the marble columns. Marion stood up in front of her desk as if trying to position herself between Ridley and the most dangerous book in the mortal and caster worlds.
Ridley, I don't think you belong in here.
Ridley pushed her sunglasses up on her head, yellow cat eyes blinking back at Marion.
I know, I know. I'm a dark caster and I don't belong in the good guys' secret clubhouse, right?
She rolled her eyes.
I am so over this.
The Lunae Libri is open to all casters, light and dark, Marion answered.
What I meant is that I'm not sure you belong with us.
It's okay, Marion. Rid helped us get the book, I explained. Ridley blew a bubble and waited for it to pop, the sound echoing loudly off the walls.
Helped you? If by help you mean set Abraham up for you so you could get the Book of Moons and kill him, then yeah, I guess I helped.
Marion stared at her, speechless. Without a word, she walked over and held up a trash can in front of Ridley's mouth.
Not in my library. Spit it out now.
Ridley sighed.
You know it's not just gum, right?
Marion didn't move. Ridley spit. Marion dropped the can.
What I don't understand is why you would risk your lives for that dreadful book. I appreciate the fact it is no longer in the hands of blood incubuses, but...
Ethan needs it, I blurted out. He found a way to contact me, and he needs the Book of Moons. He's trying to get back here.
Have you gotten another message?
Marion asked.
I nodded.
In the latest Stars and Stripes. I took a deep breath.
I need you to trust me.
I looked into her eyes.
And I need your help.
Marion studied me for a long moment. I don't know what she was thinking, or debating, or even deciding. All I know is she didn't say a word. I don't think she could. Then she nodded, pulling her chair a bit closer to me. Tell me everything. So I started talking. We took turns filling in the blanks, Link and John all but acting out our encounter with Abraham, and Rid and Uncle Macon helping me explain our plan to trade John for the Book of Moons. Liv looked on unhappily, as if she could hardly bear to hear it. Marion didn't say a word until we finished, though it was easy to read her expressions, which ranged from shock and horror to sympathy and despair. Is that everything? She looked at me, exhausted by our story. It gets worse. I looked at Ridley. You mean, aside from the fact that Link dissected Abraham with the giant scissors? Rid made a face. No, Rid. Tell her about Abraham's plans. Tell her what you heard about Angelus, I said. Uncle Macon's head snapped up at the sound of the keeper's name.
What is Lena talking about, Ridley?
Angelus and Abraham were up to something, but I don't know the details. She shrugged.
Tell us exactly what you know.
Ridley twisted a lock of pink hair around her finger nervously. This Angelus guy is a nutcase. He hates mortals and he thinks the Darkcasters and the Far Keep should be in control of the mortal world or something like that. Why? Marion was thinking out loud. Her fists were clenched so tightly that her knuckles were white. Marion's own trouble with the Far Keep was all too fresh in her memory. Ridley shrugged.
Maybe because he's special crazy?
Marion looked over at my uncle, a silent conversation passing between them. We can't let Angelus gain a foothold here. He's far too dangerous. Uncle M nodded.
I agree. We need...
I cut him off before he could finish. All I know is first we need to get the Book of Moons to Ethan. There's still a chance we can get him back.
Do you really think so?
Marion said the words quietly, almost under her breath. Though I couldn't be certain, it seemed like only I could hear them. Still, I knew Marion believed in the impossibilities of the Caster world. She'd seen them firsthand, and she loved Ethan as much as I did. He was like a son to her. We both wanted to believe. I nodded. I do. I have to. She rose from her chair and came back around the desk, poised as ever. Then it's settled. We'll get Ethan the Book of Moons, one way or another. I smiled at her, but she was already lost in thought, looking around the library as if it held the answers to all our problems, which sometimes it did.
There has to be a way, right?
John asked.
Maybe in one of these scrolls or one of these old books.
Ridley unscrewed the top of her nail polish bottle, wrinkling her nose.
Goody, old books.
Try to have a bit more respect, Ridley. A book is the reason the children in the Duquesne family suffered for generations. Marion was referring to our curse.
Ridley crossed her arms, pouting.
Whatever. Marion swiped the bottle out of her hand. Another thing I don't allow in my library. It clattered to the bottom of the trash can. Ridley glared, but she didn't say a word. Dr. Ashcroft, have you ever delivered a book to the other world? Liv asked. Marion shook her head. I can't say that I have.
Maybe Carlton Eaton could just run it on over.
Link looked hopeful.
You could wrap it up in one of those brown paper packages, like you do for my mom's books. And, you know, circulate it or something.
Marion sighed. I'm afraid not, Wesley. Even Carlton Eaton, who had his nose in every letter in town in both the mortal and caster worlds, couldn't make a delivery like that. Frustrated, Liv flipped through her little red notebook.
There has to be a way. What were the odds you could get the book from Abraham at all? And now that we have it, we're just going to give up?
She pulled the pencil from behind her ear, scribbling and mumbling to herself.
The laws of quantum physics must allow for this sort of eventuality.
I didn't know anything about the laws of quantum physics, but I knew one thing. The stone from my charm necklace disappeared when I left it for Ethan. Why would the book be any different?
I know you took it, Ethan. Why couldn't you take the book, too?
I realized Uncle Macon could probably hear me, and I tried to stop. It was no use. I couldn't stop Kelting any more than I could stop the words that strung themselves together, waiting for me to write them down somewhere. Laws of physics, laws of love, of time and space, and the in-between place. In between you and me, and where we are. Lost and looking. Looking and lost.
Maybe the book's too heavy, Link offered. That little black rock wasn't any bigger than a quarter.
I'm not sure that's the reason, Wesley, though anything is possible, Marion said.
Or impossible.
Ridley pushed her sunglasses back into place and stuck out her red tongue.
So why can't it make the jump? John asked.
Marion glanced at Liv's notes, considering the question.
The Book of Moons is a powerful supernatural object. No one really understands the scope of its power. Not the keepers or the casters. And if the origin of its magic is in the caster world, it could be deeply rooted here, Liv said. The way a tree is rooted to a particular spot.
Are you saying the book doesn't want to cross over?
John asked. Liv tucked the pencil behind her ear.
I'm saying, maybe it can't.
Or shouldn't.
Uncle Macon's tone grew more serious. Ridley slid to the floor and stretched out her long legs.
This is so messed up. I risked my life, and now we're stuck with that thing?
Maybe we need to hit the tunnels and see if any of the other bad guys know the answer. You know, Team Dark.
Liv crossed her arms over her Edison didn't invent the light bulb t-shirt. You want to take the Book of Moons to a dark caster bar?
You have a better idea? Rid asked.
I think I do.
Marion slipped her red wool jacket on. Liv scrambled after her.
Where are you going?
To see someone who knows a great deal about not just that book, but a world that defies the physics of both the caster and mortal worlds. Someone who just may have the answers we need.
My uncle nodded.
An excellent idea.
There was only one person who fit that description. Someone who loved Ethan as much as I did. Someone who would do anything for him. Even rip a hole in the universe.
Chapter 27. The Cracks in Everything.
Now don't tell me you're thinking of setting foot on my front walkway, you hear?
Amma refused to let Ridley anywhere near Waits Landing. She said so in about 15 different ways in the first conversation we unsuccessfully tried to have with her.
Mm-hmm. No dark casters are coming into this house while I'm here on this sweet earth. Or after I leave it. No, sir, no, ma'am, no how.
She agreed to meet us at Greenbrier instead. Uncle Macon hung back.
It's better this way. Aunt Marie and I haven't seen each other since the night it happened,
he explained.
I'm not sure this is the right moment.
So what you're saying is that you're scared of her, too. Ridley eyed him with new interest.
Imagine that.
I'll be at Ravenwood if you need me,
he said, giving Ridley a withering stare. Imagine that, I smiled. The rest of us waited inside the crumbling wall of the old graveyard. I resisted the urge to wander over to Ethan's plot, though I felt the familiar pull, the longing to be with him there. I believed with all my heart that there was a way to get Ethan back, and I wasn't going to stop trying until I found it. Alma was hopeful too, but I had seen the fear and doubt in her eyes. She had already lost him twice. Every time I took her another crossword puzzle, she was desperate to get him back. I think Alma wasn't about to let herself believe in anything she could stand to lose again. With the book, though, we were one step closer. Ridley was leaning against a tree, a safe distance from the hole in the stone wall. I knew she was just as afraid of Alma as Uncle Macon was, even if she wouldn't admit it.
"Don't say anything to her when she gets here,"
Link warned Ridley.
"You know how she gets about that book."
Ridley rolled her eyes. "I thought Abraham was a pain. Alma's even worse." I saw a black orthopedic lace-up step through the opening.
"Worse than what?"
Alma demanded.
"Worse than your manners?"
She looked Ridley up and down.
"Or your taste in clothes?"
She was wearing a yellow dress, all sunlight and sweetness, which didn't match her expression. Her grayish-black hair was twisted into a neat bun, and she was carrying a patterned quilting bag. I'd been around long enough to know there weren't any quilting supplies inside.
"Or a stitch worse than the girl who gets pulled out of hell only to walk back into the fire on her own."
Alma watched Ridley carefully. Ridley didn't take off her sunglasses, but I could see the shame anyway. I knew her too well. There was something about Alma that made you feel completely awful if you disappointed her, even if you were a siren with no ties to her.
"That's not what happened," Ridley said quietly.
Alma dropped her bag on the ground.
"Isn't it, then? I have it on good authority that you had a chance to be on the right side of wrong for once, and you gave it up. Did I miss something in the fine print?"
Ridley shifted nervously.
"It's not that simple."
Alma sniffed.
"You go on telling yourself that if it helps you sleep at night, but don't try to sell it to me, because I'm not buying it."
Alma pointed to the lollipop in Ridley's hand.
"And all that sugar will rot those teeth right out of your head, Castor or no Castor."
Link laughed nervously. Alma focused her eagle eye on him.
"What are you laughing about, Wesley Lincoln? You're knee-deep in more trouble than the day I caught you in my basement when you were 9 years old."
Link's face reddened.
"It sort of finds me, ma'am." "You know you go looking for it. Sure as the sun shines the same on the saints as it does on the sinners."
She glanced at each of us.
"So what is it this time?"
"And it better not have anything to do with destroying the balance of the universe."
"All saints, ma'am. No sinners."
Link backed away an inch or two, looking at me for help.
"Spit it out. I've got Aunt Mercy and Aunt Grace at the house, and I can't leave them alone with Thelma for too long. Or the three of them will order everything that comes on the shopping channel."
Alma rarely called Ethan's great aunts the sisters anymore, now that one of them was gone. But now it was Marion who walked over and took Alma's arm reassuringly.
"It's about the Book of Moons.
We have it," I blurted out. Liv stepped aside, revealing the Book of Moons lying on the ground behind her. Alma's eyes widened.
"Do I want to know how you got it?"
Link jumped in.
"Nope, I mean, no, ma'am, you sure don't."
"The fact remains we have it now," Marion said.
"But we can't get it to Ethan." I heard the desperation in my voice. Alma shook her head and approached the book, circling it like she didn't want to get too close.
"Course you can't. This book is too powerful for one world. If you want to send it from the world of the living to the world of the dead, we'll need the power of both worlds to send it."
I wasn't sure what she meant, but I only cared about one thing.
"Will you help us?"
"Not my help you need. You need help on the receiving end."
Liv inched closer to Alma.
"We left the book for Ethan, but he didn't take it."
She sniffed.
"Ethan's not strong enough to carry that kind of weight across.
He probably doesn't even know how.
But there is someone strong enough, Marion coaxed. Perhaps more than one someone. She was talking about the greats. The question was, would Alma call them? I bit my lip. Please say yes.
Figured if you were calling, you were looking to test out just how far crazy will go.
Alma opened the quilting bag and took out a shot glass and a bottle of wild turkey.
So I came prepared.
She poured a shot and pointed to me.
You're gonna have to help, though. We need the power of both worlds, don't forget.
I nodded. I'll do whatever I need to. Alma nodded in the direction of Ravenwood.
You can stop by gathering up the rest of your kin. You don't have the kind of power we need on your own.
Rit is here, and John can help too. He's half-caster.
Alma shook her head. If you want that book to cross, you're gonna have to get the rest of them.
They're in Barbados. Actually, they returned a few hours ago, Marion said. Rhys stopped by the library earlier tonight. She said your grandmother wasn't fond of the humidity.
I tried not to smile. What my grandmother wasn't fond of was missing all the action, and Rhys wasn't much better. With every caster power in my extended family, I was certain they knew something was going on.
I could ask them, but they might be tired from all the travel.
I was worried enough that Uncle M was going to change his mind about all this. Adding the rest of my family into the mix fell somewhere between risky and idiotic.
Alma crossed her arms, as determined as I'd ever seen her.
What I know is that this book isn't going anywhere without them.
There was no use arguing with her. I had watched Ethan try to talk her down when her mind was made up, and he rarely succeeded. And Alma loved him more than anyone in the world. I didn't stand a chance. Ridley nodded at me.
I'll go with you for backup.
Your mom will freak if you just show up. I'm going to have to tell her you're back, and I should probably tell them that you've... I hesitated. It wasn't going to be easy for anyone in my family to deal with the fact that Ridley ran back to Seraphine for her dark caster powers. Changed. Link looked away. That wasn't the worst of it. It's going to be hard enough to explain to Grandma why I have the book.
Rid slung her arm over my shoulder. Don't you know that the best way to distract someone from bad news is to give them some worse news?
She smiled, leading me toward Ravenwood. News doesn't get much worse than me.
Link shook his head. No kidding. Ridley spun around and pushed her sunglasses up.
Zip it, Shrinky Dink, or I'll make you want to rip into your mother's room and tell her you're becoming a Methodist.
Your powers don't work on me anymore, babe.
Ridley blew him a sticky pink kiss. Try me.
Chapter 28. Caster Catfight. I opened the front door and the air inside the house seemed to move. No, it was moving. Hundreds of butterflies fluttered through the air while others rested on the delicate antique furniture Uncle Macon had spent years collecting. Butterflies? What was I doing to Ravenwood? A tiny green butterfly with streaks of gold across its wings landed on the bottom of the banister.
Macon?
Grandma's voice called from the second floor.
Is that you?
No, Grandma, it's me, Lena.
She swept down the stairs in a high-neck white blouse, her hair gathered neatly in a bun, and her lace-up boots peeking out from under her long skirt. Against the perfectly restored flying staircase, she looked like a Southern belle right out of an old movie. She glanced at the butterflies flitting around the room and gave me a hug.
I'm so glad to see you're in a good mood.
Grandma knew Ravenwood's interior constantly changed to mirror my moods. To her, a room full of butterflies meant happiness. But for me, it meant something entirely different. Something I had been clinging to tightly. Hope, born on green and gold wings. Dark and light,
like I had become the night of my claiming. I touched the wire Christmas tree star on my charm necklace. I had to focus. Everything had come down to this. Ethan was out there somewhere, and there was a chance we could bring him home. I just had to convince my family to lend their powers to us. Grandma, I need your help with something.
Of course, sweetheart.
She wouldn't be saying that if she knew what I was about to tell her. What if I told you I found the Book of Moons? Grandma froze.
Why would you ask me something like that, Lena? Do you know where it is?
I nodded. She gathered her skirt, rushing toward the stairs.
We have to tell Macon. The sooner we get that book back to the Lunae Libri, the better.
We can't. Grandma turned around slowly, her eyes looking right through me.
Start explaining, young lady, and you can start by telling me how you found the Book of Moons.
Ridley stepped out from behind a marble column. I helped her. For one long moment, I held my breath until it became clear Ravenwood wasn't about to fall to the ground.
How did you get in here?
Grandma's voice was as controlled as Ridley's, maybe more. She'd been around a long time, and it would take more than my dark-again cousin to throw her.
Lena let me in.
There was a flicker of disappointment in my grandmother's eyes.
I see you're wearing your sunglasses again.
It was kind of a self-preservation thing.
Ridley bit her lip nervously.
The world's a dangerous place.
It was something my grandmother said to us all the time when we were kids, particularly to Ridley. I remembered something else she said, something that might delay the confession of the Abraham story long enough for me to get the book to Ethan.
Grandma, do you remember the deal you made with Ridley the first time she went to a party?
She looked at me blankly.
I'm not sure I do.
You told her not to get in a car with anyone who had been drinking.
Certainly good advice, but I'm not sure how it relates to this situation.
You told Rid that if she called and said her ride was drinking, you would send someone to pick her up, no questions asked.
I saw a hint of recognition pass across her face. You said she wouldn't get in trouble, no matter where she was or what she did. Ridley leaned against the column awkwardly.
Yeah, it was like a get-out-of-jail-free card. I definitely needed one of those recently.
Is this conversation going to explain why you two are in possession of the most dangerous book in the caster or mortal world?
Grandma looked skeptically from my cousin to me.
I'm calling to tell you my ride has been drinking, I blurted out.
Pardon me.
I need you to trust me and do something without asking any questions. Something for Ethan.
Lena, Ethan is...
I held up my hand. Don't say it. We both know people can communicate from the other side. Ethan sent me a message, and I need your help.
She's telling the truth. At least she thinks she is, for what it's worth.
Reese was standing in the darkened doorway to the dining room. I hadn't even seen her, but she had obviously seen me. It only took a Sybil one look at your face to read it, and Reese was among the best. Finally, it was working to my advantage.
Even if you are telling the truth, you are asking for more than just a little faith. And no matter how much I love you, I can't help you use.
We aren't trying to use the Book of Moons.
I wondered if she would believe me.
We're trying to send it to Ethan.
The room was silent, and I waited for her to say something.
What would lead you to believe that's possible?
I explained the messages Ethan had been leaving in the crosswords, but I left out the part about how we actually got our hands on the Book of Moons, invoking the "My ride is drunk" clause. I wouldn't get away with it forever. Eventually, Grandma would insist on an explanation. But I didn't need forever, just tonight. After we sent the book to Ethan, Grandma could interrogate me all she wanted. Besides, Uncle M already had first dibs on the grounding. She listened carefully, sipping from a black porcelain teacup that appeared in her hand, compliments of kitchen. She didn't offer a single word, and she didn't look away from me as I spoke. Finally, the cup found its way back into the saucer, and I knew she had made a decision. My grandmother drew a deep breath.
If Ethan needs our assistance, we have no choice but to give it to him. After what he sacrificed for us all, it's the least we can do.
Grandma! Reese threw up her hands. Listen to yourself.
How can she when you're yelling? Ridley snapped. Reese ignored her.
You're really going to send the most powerful book in the Caster universe into the other world with no way of knowing who'll be on the other end?
Rid shrugged. At least you won't be there. Reese looked like she wanted to stab Ridley with garden shears of her own.
Ethan will be there, I argued.
Grandma hesitated, a new thought shaking her resolve.
It's not as if we're shipping a package, Lena. What if the book doesn't end up where we intend?
Reese looked satisfied. Ridley looked like now she was the one thinking about garden shears.
Alma's going to call the greats.
Grandma finished her tea and the cup vanished.
Well, if Almarie is involved, I'm sure she has a plan. I'll get my coat.
Wait, I looked over at Reese. We need everyone to come. Alma says we won't have enough power unless we do this together.
Reese looked at Uncle Macon, who had sidled into the room at the first sign of the Caster family fighting.
Are you going to let her do this?
He chose his words carefully.
On the one hand, I think this is a very bad idea.
There, Reese smiled. What? Losing my uncle's support was the one thing I had been afraid of when Alma sent me for reinforcements.
Let him finish, girls.
Grandma raised her voice.
But, Uncle M continued, we owe Ethan a debt we will never be able to properly repay. I watched him give his life for us, and I don't take that lightly.
I exhaled. Thank goodness. Uncle Macon, Reese started.
He silenced her with a gesture.
This isn't up for discussion. If it weren't for Ethan, you could be powerless right now. Or worse, the order was broken, and we were only beginning to see the effects. Things were headed in a very grave direction indeed, I promise you that. I don't know why we're still talking about it then.
Grandma gathered her skirt and ascended the stairs.
I'll get Dell, Barkley, and Ryan.
Ridley swallowed hard at the sound of her mother's name. Aunt Dell was always heartsick when Ridley disappeared, and she had no idea her daughter was back, or that she had returned as a dark caster. I remembered how happy Aunt Dell looked when Ridley lost her powers last summer. Being immortal was better than being dark, especially in this family. Reese turned to face her sister.
You shouldn't be here. Haven't you put everyone through enough pain?
Ridley stiffened.
I thought you deserved a little more, sis. Wouldn't want to leave you hanging. I mean, seeing how you've always been there for me.
She said it sarcastically, but I could hear the pain. Ridley only pretended she didn't have a heart. I heard voices. Aunt Dell appeared at the top of the staircase. Uncle Barkley's arm was wrapped tightly around her. I wasn't sure if she'd overheard us or if Grandma told her about Ridley, but I could tell by the way Aunt Dell was wringing her hands that she already knew the truth. Uncle Barkley led her down the stairs, his tall frame looming over her. His salt and pepper hair was combed neatly, and for once he looked like he belonged in the same era as the rest of us. Ryan trailed behind them, her long blonde hair swinging in a ponytail. When Ryan and Ridley were standing in the same room, it was impossible to ignore how much they resembled each other.
In the last 6 months, Ryan had come to look more like a teenager than a little girl, even though she was only 12. Aunt Del smiled at Rid weakly.
I'm glad you're all right. I was so worried.
Ridley bit her lip and teetered on her stacked heels. I'm sorry, you know, I couldn't exactly call. Abraham had Rid locked up. I blurted it out before I could stop myself. Ridley was guilty of lots of things, but it was hard to watch them judge her for something that was out of her control. Aunt Del's face crumpled. Everyone's did, except for Reese's. She positioned herself protectively between her mother and her dark sister.
Is that true?
Uncle Barkley sounded genuinely concerned. Ridley twisted a pink strand between her fingers nervously. Yeah, he was a real prince. She kelted to me desperately.
Don't tell them, cuz. Not now.
I'm fine, Ridley went on, waving off her father's concern. Let's worry about Ethan. No one wants to hear about me and the big bad wolf. Ryan stepped closer to Ridley tentatively.
I do, she said quietly.
Rid didn't respond. Instead, she held out her empty hand. I waited for a mouse or a lollipop to appear in her palm, some cheap trick to distract her sister from what she was now. But her hand stayed empty. Ryan smiled and reached out her own hand, closing it around Ridley's. I heard Aunt Del's breath catch. Or maybe it was mine.
If Lena trusts you, so do I, Ryan said.
She looked at Reese.
Sisters should trust each other.
Reese didn't move, but I didn't need to be a Sybil to read her face. Tiny cracks were already forming in the tough exterior Reese worked so hard to maintain. They were hard to see, but they were there. The beginning of something. Tears, forgiveness, regret. I couldn't be sure. It reminded me of something Marion told Ethan before everything happened. It was one of her famous quotes by a guy named Leonard Cohen. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. That's what I thought of when I saw Reese's face. The light was finally getting in.
Lena, are you all right?
Uncle Barkley glanced at the ceiling. The crystal chandelier was swinging dangerously above us. I took a deep breath and it stopped immediately.
Get control of yourself.
I'm fine, I lied.
I composed the words in my head, even if I wouldn't let my pen write them. Bent, like the branches of a tree. Broken, like the pieces of my heart. Cracked, like the 17th moon. Shattered, like the glass in the window the day we met. I closed my eyes, trying to silence the words that wouldn't stop coming.
No.
I ignored them, forcing them out of my mind. I wasn't kelting them to Uncle Macon, and I wasn't writing a word until Ethan came back. Not a single word.
Ah, Marie is expecting us. We should go.
Uncle Macon slipped on his black cashmere coat.
She is not a woman who appreciates being kept waiting.
Boo lumbered behind him, his thick fur blending seamlessly into the darkness of the room. Ridley opened the door, fleeing as fast as she could. She unwrapped a red lollipop before she even made it down the steps of the veranda. She hesitated for a second near the flower bed before pocketing the wrapper. Maybe people could change. Even the ones who made the wrong choices, if they tried hard enough to make them right. I wasn't sure, but I hoped so. I had made enough bad choices myself in the last year. I walked toward the only one that had been right, the only one that mattered. Ethan, I'm coming.
Chapter 29, The Hands of the Dead.
It's about time.
Her arms crossed impatiently. Amma was staring at the opening in the old stone wall when we stepped through. Uncle Macon was right. She didn't like to be kept waiting. Marion gently put her hand on Amma's shoulder. I'm sure it was difficult to round everyone up.
Amma sniffed, ignoring the excuse.
There's difficult, and then there's difficult.
John and Liv were sitting on the ground next to each other, Liv's head resting casually on John's shoulder. Uncle Barkley stepped through after me and helped Aunt Dell navigate the broken pieces of the wall. She blinked hard, staring at a spot not far from Genevieve's grave. She swayed, and Uncle Barkley steadied her. The layers of time were obviously peeling themselves back, the way they did only for Aunt Dell. I wondered what she saw. So much had happened at Greenbrier. Ethan Carter Waite's death. The first time Genevieve used the Book of Moons to bring him back. The day Ethan and I found her locket and had the vision. And the night Aunt Dell used her powers to show us those pieces of Genevieve's past in this very spot. But everything had changed since then. The day Ethan and I were trying to figure out how to repair the order, and I accidentally burned the grass beneath us. When I watched my mother burn to death. Can Aunt Dell see all of it? Can she see that? An unexpected feeling of shame washed over me, and I secretly hoped she couldn't. Amma nodded at Grandma.
Emmeline, you're looking well.
Grandma smiled.
As are you, Amarie.
Uncle Makin was the last one to enter the lost garden. He lingered near the wall, an uncharacteristic and almost imperceptible unease about him. Amma locked eyes with him, as if they were having a conversation that only they could hear. The tension was impossible to ignore. I hadn't seen them together since the night we lost Ethan, and both of them claimed everything was fine. But now they were standing only feet apart. It was clear nothing was fine. Actually, Amma looked like she wanted to tear my uncle's head off.
Amarie,
he said slowly, bowing his head respectfully.
I'm surprised you showed up. Aren't you worried some of my wickedness might stain those fancy shoes of yours?
She said.
Wouldn't want that, not when your party's shoes cost such a pretty penny.
What is she talking about? Amma was a saint. At least, that's how I'd always thought of her. Grandma and Aunt Dell exchanged glances, looking equally confused. Marion turned away. She knew something, but she wasn't saying.
Grief makes people desperate,
Uncle M responded.
If anyone understands that, I do.
Amma turned her back on him, facing the whiskey and shot glass lying on the ground next to the Book of Moons.
I'm not sure you understand anything that doesn't suit your purpose, Melchizedek. If I didn't think we'd need your help, I would send you packing straight back to your house.
That's hardly fair. I was trying to protect you.
Uncle Makin stopped when he noticed we were all staring. All of us except Marion and John, who were doing everything they could not to look at Amma or my uncle. That pretty much meant looking at the mud on the ground or the Book of Moons, neither of which was going to make anyone any less uncomfortable. Amma spun back around to face Uncle Makin.
Next time, try protecting me a little less and my boy a little more, if there is a next time.
Did she blame Uncle Makin for not doing a better job of protecting Ethan when he was alive? It didn't make any sense.
Why are you two fighting like this? I demanded. You're acting like Rhys and Ridley.
Hey, said Rhys. Rid just shrugged. I shot Amma and my uncle a look.
I thought we were here to help Ethan.
Amma sniffed and my uncle looked unhappy, but neither of them said a word. Marion finally spoke up. I think we're all worried. It would probably be best if we put everything else aside and focused on the issue at hand. Amma, what is it you need us to do? Amma didn't take her eyes off my uncle.
Need the casters to form a circle around me. Mortals can spread out between them. We need the power of this world to hand that evil thing off to the ones who can take it the rest of the way.
The greats, right? I hoped so.
She nodded.
If they answer.
If they answered, was there a chance they wouldn't? Alma pointed to the ground at my feet.
Lena, I need you to bring me the book.
I lifted the dusty leather volume and felt the power pulsing through it like a heartbeat.
The book's not gonna wanna go,
Alma explained.
It wants to stay here, where it can cause trouble, like your cousin there.
Ridley rolled her eyes, but Alma only looked at me.
I'll call the greats, but you need to keep a hand on it till they take it.
What was it going to do? Fly away?
Everyone else make that circle. Hold hands nice and tight.
After Ridley and Link bickered about holding hands, and Reese refused to hold hands with Ridley or John, they finally completed the circle. Alma glanced over at me.
The greats haven't been exactly happy with me. They may not come, and if they do, I can't promise they'll take the book.
I couldn't imagine the greats being upset with Alma. They were her family, and they had come to our rescue more than once. We just needed them to do it one more time.
I need the casters to concentrate everything you got inside the circle.
Alma bent down and filled the shot glass with wild turkey. She drank the shot and then refilled it for Uncle Abner.
I don't care what happens. You send the power my way.
What if you get hurt? Liv asked, concerned. Alma stared back at Liv, her expression twisted and broken.
Can't get any more hurt than I am already. You just hold on.
Uncle Macon stepped forward, dropping Aunt Del's hand.
Would it help if I assisted you?
He asked Alma. She pointed a shaky finger at him.
You get out of my circle. You can do your part from there.
I felt a surge of heat from the book, as if its anger flared to meet Alma's. Uncle Macon stepped back and joined hands with everyone else.
One day, you will forgive me, Amarie.
Her dark eyes narrowed to meet his green ones.
Not today.
Alma closed her eyes, and my hair began to curl involuntarily as she spoke the words only she could.
Blood of my blood and roots of my soul. I'm in need of your intercession.
The wind began to whip around me within the circle, and lightning cracked overhead. I felt the heat of the book joining with the heat of my hands, the heat I could command to burn and destroy. Alma didn't stop, as if she was talking to the sky.
I call you to carry what I cannot, to see what I cannot, to do what I cannot.
A green glow surged from Uncle Macon's hands and spread around the circle from one hand to the next. Grandma closed her eyes, as if she was trying to channel Macon's power. John noticed and closed his eyes too, and the light intensified. Lightning tore across the sky, but the universe didn't open up, and the greats didn't appear.
Where are you?
I pleaded silently. Alma tried again.
This is the crossroads I can't cross. Only you can take this book to my boy. Deliver it to your world from ours.
I concentrated harder, ignoring the heat of the book in my hands. I heard a branch break, then another. I opened my eyes and a burst of flame sprang up outside the circle. It caught like someone had lit the wick on a stick of dynamite, tearing through the grass and creating another circle outside the first. The wake of fire, the uncontrollable flames that ignited sometimes against my will. The garden was burning again, because of me. How many times could this earth char before the damage was irreparable? Alma squeezed her eyes tighter. This time she spoke the words plainly. They weren't a chant, but a plea.
I know you don't want to come for me, so come for Ethan. He's waiting on you, and you're as much his family as you are mine. Do the right thing. One last time. Uncle Abner, Aunt
Delilah, Aunt Ivy, Grandmama Sulla, Twyla, please. The sky opened up, and rain poured down from the heavens. But the fire still raged, and the caster light still glowed. I saw something small and black circling above us. The crow. Ethan's crow. Amma opened her eyes and saw it too. That's right, Uncle Abner. Don't punish Ethan for my mistakes. I know you've been looking after him over there the same way you've always looked after us down here. He needs this book. Maybe you know why. Even if I don't. The crow circled closer and closer, and the faces began to appear in the dark sky. One by one, their features carving themselves out of the universe above us. Uncle Abner appeared first, his lined face creased by time. The crow landed on his shoulder, like a tiny mouse at the feet of a giant. Sulla, the prophet, was next, regal braids cascading over her shoulder. Strands of tangled beads rested against her chest as if they weighed nothing, or were worth the weight. The Book of Moons bucked in my hands as if trying to pull free, but I knew it wasn't the greats reaching for it. The book was resisting. I tightened my grip as Aunt Delilah and Aunt Ivy appeared simultaneously, holding hands and looking down like they were evaluating the scene. Our intentions or our abilities, it was impossible to know. But they were judging us nonetheless. I could feel it. And the book could, too. It tried to pull free again, singeing the skin on my palms. Don't let go, Amma warned. I won't, I called over the wind. Aunt Twyla, where are you? Aunt Twyla's dark eyes appeared before her gentle face and arms laden with bracelets, before her braided hair knotted with charms, or the rows of earrings that marched down her ears. Ethan needs this, I shouted over the wind and the rain and the fire. The greats stared down at us, but they didn't react. The Book of Moons did. I felt the pulse beating within it, the power and rage spreading through my body like poison. Don't let go. Images flashed in front of my eyes. Genevieve holding the book, speaking the words that would bring Ethan Carter Waite back for a split second and curse our family for generations. Amma and me speaking the same words, standing over Ethan Lawson Waite. Our Ethan. His eyes opening and Uncle Macon's closing. Abraham standing over the book as the fire threatened Ravenwood in the distance, his brother's voice begging him to stop. Right before he killed Jonah. I could see it all. All the people this book had touched and hurt. The people I knew and the ones I didn't recognize. I could feel it pulling away from me again, and I screamed louder this time. Amma grabbed the book, her hands over mine. Where parts of her skin were touching the leather, I could feel her skin burning. Tears formed in her eyes, but she didn't let go. Help us! I screamed into the sky. It wasn't the sky that answered. Genevieve Duquesne materialized in the darkness, her hazy form close enough to touch. Give it to me. Amma could see her. It was obvious from her haunted expression. But I was the only one who could hear her counting. Her long red hair blew in the wind in a way that seemed both impossible and right. At the same time, I'll take it. It doesn't belong in this world. It never did. I wanted to hand her the book, to send it to Ethan, and to stop Alma's hands from burning. But Genevieve was a dark caster. I only had to look at her yellow eyes to remember. Amma was trembling. Genevieve reached out her hand. What if I made the wrong choice? Ethan would never get the book, and I would never see him again. How do I know I can trust you?
Genevieve's heartbroken eyes stared back at me. You'll only know if you do.
The Greats looked down at us, and there was no way to know if they were going to help. Amma's mortal hands were burning alongside my caster ones, and the Book of Moons was no closer to Ethan than when it was in Abraham Ravenwood's hands not long ago. Sometimes, there's only one choice. Sometimes, you just have to jump or let go. Take it, Genevieve. I pulled my hands away, and Alma's moved with mine. The book jerked free as if it sensed its only chance at escape. It lurched toward the outer circle, where John and Link were holding hands. The glowing green light was still in place, and John concentrated his gaze on the book.
I don't think so.
It hit the light and ricocheted back into the center of the circle and Genevieve's waiting hands. She closed her hazy palms around it, and the book seemed to shudder. Not this time. I held my breath, listening to Alma cry. Genevieve pressed the book against her chest and dematerialized. My heart dropped.
Alma! She took it!
I couldn't think, or feel, or breathe. I had made the wrong choice. I would never see Ethan again. My knees gave out, and I felt myself falling. I heard a rip, and an arm caught me around the waist.
Lena, look.
It was Link. I blinked back the tears and looked at him, his free hand pointing at the sky. Genevieve was there in the darkness, her red hair trailing behind her. She held the Book of Moons out to Sulla, who took it from her hands. Genevieve smiled at me. You can trust me. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. She disappeared, leaving the Greats looming in the sky behind her like giants. Alma held her burnt hands to her chest and stared up at her family from another world. The world where Ethan was trapped. Tears ran down her cheeks as the green glow died around us.
You take that book to my boy, you hear?
Uncle Abner tipped his hat to her.
Be expecting a pie now, Alma. One of those lemon meringues will do me just fine.
Alma choked back a final sob as her legs gave out from under her. I dropped with her, breaking her fall. I watched as the rain drowned out the fire and the Greats disappeared. I had no way of knowing what was going to happen next. There was only one thing I knew for sure. Ethan had a chance now. The rest was up to him.
Book 3. Ethan. Chapter 30. Lost Time.
Elle? Are you there? Can you hear me? I'm waiting. I know you'll find the book soon. You wouldn't believe this place. I feel like I'm living in a 10,000-year-old temple, or maybe a fortress. You wouldn't believe this guy, either. My friend Xavier? At least, I think he's my friend. He's like a 10,000-year-old monk, or maybe some kind of ancient temple wombat. Do you know what waiting feels like in a world where no time passes? Minutes feel like centuries, eternities, only worse, because you can't even tell which is which. I find myself counting things, compulsively. It's the only way I know how to mark the time. 62 plastic buttons, 11 broken strands of between 14 and 36 pearls each, 109 old baseball cards, 9 AA batteries, $12,754.03 in coins from 6 countries, or maybe just 6 centuries. More or less. I didn't know how to count the doubloons. This morning, I counted grains of rice falling through the split seam of a stuffed frog. I don't know where Xavier finds this stuff. I made it to 999, and then I lost my place and had to start over again. That was how I spent today. Like I said, a person could go crazy trying to pass the time in a place with no time. When you find the Book of Moons, El, I'll know. I'll be out of here the second I can. I keep my stuff ready to go by the mouth of the cave, Aunt Prue's map, an empty flask of whiskey, and a tobacco tin. Don't ask. Can you believe, after everything, that the book is still coming between us? I know you're going to find it. One day, you will. And I'll be waiting. I'm not sure if thinking about Lena makes the time pass faster or slower, but it doesn't matter. I couldn't stop thinking about her if I tried. Which I have, playing chess with these creepy figures Xavier collects, helping him catalog everything from bottle caps and marbles to ancient caster volumes. Today it's stones. Xavier must have hundreds of them, ranging from raw diamonds as big as strawberries to chunks of quartz and plain old rocks.
It's important to keep careful records of everything I have.
Xavier added 3 hunks of coal to the list. I stared at the rocks in front of me. Gravel, Amma would say, just the right shade of gray for Dean Wilkes' driveway. I wondered what Amma was doing right now. And my mom? The 2 women who raised me were in 2 totally different worlds, and I couldn't see either of them. I held up a handful of dusty driveway gravel. Why do you collect these, anyway? They're just rocks. Xavier looked shocked.
Stones have power. They absorb people's feelings and their fears, even their memories.
I didn't need anyone else's fears. I had enough of my own. I reached into my pocket and took out the black stone. I rubbed the smooth surface between my fingers. This one was Sulla's. It was shaped like a thick teardrop, while Lena's was rounder. Here, I held it out to Xavier. You can add it to your collection. I was pretty sure I wouldn't need it to cross the river again. I would either find my way back home, or I would never leave here. Somehow, I knew that, even if I didn't know anything else. Xavier stared at the stone for a long minute.
You keep it, dead man. Those aren't...
After that, I couldn't make out what he was saying. My vision started to blur. Xavier's leathery black skin and the stone in my palm shifting until they started to bleed together into a single dark shadow. Sulla sat at an old wicker table, an oil lamp illuminating the small room. A spread was laid out in front of her, the cards of Providence, lined up in 2 neat rows, each stamped with a black sparrow in the corner. Sulla's mark. A tall man sat across from her, his smooth head gleaming in the light.
The bleeding blade, blind man's rage, liar's promise, the stolen heart.
She frowned and shook her head.
Can tell you none of this is good. What you're chasing, you ain't never gonna find, and it'll be worse if you do.
The man ran his huge hands over his scalp nervously.
What's that supposed to mean, Sulla? Stop talking in circles.
It means they're never gonna give you what you want, Angelus. The Far Keep doesn't need a spread to know you've been breaking their rules all along.
Angelus pushed away from the table violently.
I don't need them to give me what I want. I have other keepers behind me, keepers who want to be more than scribes. Why should we be forced to record history when we can be the ones who make it?
Can't change the cards. That's all I know.
Angelus stared at the beautiful woman with the golden skin and delicate braids.
Words can change things, Seer. You just have to put them in the right book. Something caught Sulla's eye, and she was distracted for a moment. Her granddaughter crouched behind the door, listening. On any other night, Sulla wouldn't have minded. Amarie was 17, older than Sulla was when she learned to read cards. Sulla didn't want the girl to see this man. There was something evil inside him. She didn't need the cards to see that much. Angelus started to stand, his huge hands clenched into fists. Sulla tapped a card at the top of the spread with a pair of golden gates inked across the face. "This one here's a wild card." The man hesitated. "What does it mean?"
"Means sometimes we make our own fate. Things the cards can't see. Depends on which side of the gate you choose."
Angelus picked up the card, crumpling it in his hand. "I've stood outside the gates long enough." The door slammed, and Amarie stepped out from her hiding place.
"Who was that, Grandmama?"
The older woman picked up the crumpled card, smoothing it with her hands.
"He's a keeper from up north, a man who wants more than any man should have."
"What does he want?" Sulla's eyes met Amarie's, and for a second she was not sure if she would answer the girl.
"To tamper with fate, change the cards."
"But you can't change the cards." Sulla looked away, remembering what she'd seen in the cards the day Amarie was born.
"Sometimes you can, but there's always a price."
When I opened my eyes, Xavier was standing above me, his features twisted in concern.
"What did you see, dead man?"
The black stone was warm in my hand. I squeezed it tighter, as if it could somehow bring me closer to Amma, to the memories locked within its shiny black surface. How many times has Angelus changed the Castor Chronicles, Xavier? The gatekeeper looked away, wringing his long fingers nervously. "Xavier, answer me." Our eyes met, and I saw the pain in his.
"Too many times."
Why is he doing it? What did Angelus have to gain?
"Some men want to be more than mortal. Angelus is one of those men."
"Are you saying he wanted to be a caster?" Xavier nodded slowly.
"He wanted to change fate, to find a way to defy supernatural law and mix mortal and caster blood."
Genetic engineering. So he wanted mortals to have powers like casters. Xavier ran his abnormally long hand over his bald head.
"There is no reason to have power if you are left with no one to torment and control."
It didn't make sense. It was too late for Angelus. Was he, like Abraham Ravenwood, trying to create some kind of hybrid child? Was he experimenting on children? Xavier turned away, and for a long moment, he was silent.
"He experimented on himself, using dark casters."
A chill ran up my spine, and I couldn't swallow. I couldn't imagine what the Keeper must have done to them. I was trying to find the right words to ask, but Xavier told me before I had a chance.
"Angelus tested their blood, tissue, I don't know what else, and he injected a serum made from their blood into his own. It didn't give him the power he wanted, but he kept trying. Each injection made him paler and more desperate."
"That sounds horrible." He turned his deformed face back toward mine.
"That was not the horrible part, dead man. That would come later."
I didn't want to ask, but I couldn't stop myself. What happened?
"Eventually, he found a caster whose blood gave him a mutated version of his own power. She was light and beautiful and kind. And I..."
He hesitated. "Did you love her?"
His features looked more human than ever before.
I did. And Angelus destroyed her.
I'm so sorry, Xavier. He nodded.
She was a powerful telepath before she went mad from Angelus's experiments.
A mind reader. Suddenly I understood. Are you saying Angelus can read minds?
Only mortal ones.
Only mortal ones. Like mine and Liv's and Marion's. I needed to find my page in the Castor Chronicles and get back home.
Don't look so sad, dead man.
I watched the hands on Xavier's clocks turn in different directions, marking the passage of time that didn't exist here. I didn't want to tell him that I wasn't sad. I was afraid. I kept my eyes on those clocks, but I still couldn't keep track of the time. Sometimes it got so bad that I started to forget what I was waiting for in the first place. Too much time will do that to you, blur the edges between your memories and your imagination until everything feels like something you saw in a movie instead of your life. I was beginning to give up on ever seeing the Book of Moons again, which meant giving up on a whole lot more than some old Castor book. It meant giving up on Gatlin, the good and the bad of it, giving up on Amma and my dad, and Aunt Marion, Link and Liv and John, Jackson High and the Dairy Keen and Waits Landing and Route 9, the place where I first realized Lena was the girl from my dreams. Giving up on the book meant giving up on her. I couldn't do that. I wouldn't. After what had to be a few days or a few weeks, it was impossible to know. Xavier realized I was losing more than time. He was sitting on the dirt floor inside the cave, cataloging what looked like thousands of keys.
What did she look like?
Who? I asked.
The girl.
I watched him sort the keys by size, then shape. I wondered where they came from, whose doors they opened, as I searched for the right words. She was alive.
Was she beautiful?
Was she? It was getting harder to remember. Yeah, I think so. Xavier stopped sorting the keys, watching me.
What did she look like, the girl?
How could I tell him everything was swirling in my mind, blending together in a way that made it impossible to picture her clearly?
Ethan? Did you hear me? You have to tell me, otherwise you will forget. That's what happens if you spend too much time here. You'll lose everything that made you who you were. This place takes it from you.
I turned away before I answered. I'm not sure. It's all a blur.
Was her hair gold?
Xavier loved gold. No, I said. I was pretty sure, though I couldn't remember why. I stared at the wall in front of me, trying to picture her face. Then a single thought came to me, and I opened my eyes. There were curls, lots and lots of curls.
The girl?
Yes. I looked at the rocky outcroppings at the top of the cave. Lena.
Her name is Lena?
I nodded as tears began to stream down my face. I was so relieved I could still remember her name.
Hurry, Lena. I don't have much time left.
By the time I saw the crow again, I had forgotten. My memories were like dreams, except I never slept. I watched Xavier. I counted buttons and cataloged coins. I stared at the sky. That's what I was trying to do now, but the stupid bird kept shrieking and flapping its enormous wings. Go away! He shrieked even louder. I rolled onto my side and swatted at him. That's when I saw the book lying in the dirt in front of me.
Xavier, I said, my voice unsteady. Come here. "What is it, dead man?"
I heard him call from the cave. "The Book of Moons." I picked it up, and it was warm in my hands. But my hands didn't burn. I remembered thinking they should. As I held the book, my memories came flooding back to me. Just as this book had brought me back from the dead once before, so now was it bringing my life back to me again. I could picture every detail, the places I'd been, the things I'd done, the people I loved. I could see Lena's delicate face, her green and gold eyes, and the crescent-shaped birthmark on her cheek. I remembered lemons and rosemary and hurricane-force winds and spontaneous combustion, everything that made Lena the girl I loved. I was whole again, and I knew I had to leave this place.